Go ahead, brother.
All right. My name is Dan, and I am an alcoholic. And I say I'm an alcoholic because alcohol had become a real problem for me in my life while I was drinking, and remains a problem for me in my life while I'm sober. And I say that in a spiritual context, not in a liquid context. I was born in the Elmwood Village. So I say I'm from Buffalo, even though I moved out to Eden when I was about 9 months old. And that's where I currently reside. I took, liberty of the greenery around here, to play baseball when I was a kid. I had two good parents. My mom was a doctor. My dad was a lawyer, and they took time to spend time with me when I was young, playing baseball, and they went to all my games. And the only thing that was a little off was that my mom, when she was in med school, she had unofficially adopted a young woman who was from St. Thomas, an American citizen. She was my nanny. So, there was a lot of work around the house, and there was a lot of it was like drilled into me to work hard and to really have some discipline. And it was a little bit of a culture clash, I would say, growing up in the country with a black woman telling me what to do all the time. So I proceeded through my youth in a rather normal way, playing tennis, going to school, having friends at school, being popular, talking to the girls, becoming an adolescent, doing all of that. And then one day, I heard stories of this guy named I started to hear stories. Well, I was a fan of The Simpsons. So, what did they drink on The Simpsons? They sat in a bar and they drank Duff. So I was like, what is this substance that they're drinking that they just sit there all the time and they're content to just sit there and do nothing? What does it do? And I heard about this guy named Jude. And Jude had been my mom's ex-boyfriend for a long time, and he was talked about as this guy who had this obsession with alcohol, where he drank alcohol all the time. And I thought, there must really be something to this substance that I might see. My mom never drank. I might see my dad have a beer every once in a while. And I just wondered, what the hell is this stuff? So one day my brother and his friends, we had a friend, it was me, this kid Zach, this girl Meredith, and my brother, who were kind of the wealthier kids in Eden. Eden's a farming community, and we kind of we would all end up going off to public or to private school, but proceeding to that, my brother and his friends decided to have some parties in the basement. And my parents' liquor cabinet from their wedding was open, and it was largely untouched because my parents hardly drank and my mom never drank. So they had parties, and I had been watching films like American Pie and whatever else was popular at the time, where it was movies of people partying and drinking and getting hammered. And I didn't know anything about what the effects of alcohol would be, except for what I've elaborated to you already. So I decided to have my friends, and I had a beer here and there with my friend Zach, who was an influence on me for many years. I decided to have my friends and have a party of our own. So one night we were supposed to go see the movie SWAT, and I drove out to Resentment because my mom wouldn't let us go see the movie. So we rented one of these, like, getting hammered movies from Blockbuster, which, as you all know, has gone out of business by now. That dates me back to when I was young, really young. And we opened the liquor cabinet, and the first thing that I really got hammered on was a screwdriver, which is the perfect, or the absolute worst drink you can imagine for like an eighth grader or a seventh grader to be drinking, like gin with orange juice. And I got so hammered that I woke up the next morning, people being like, "Oh my God, you did this, you did that." It was embarrassing. It was embarrassing to me. And I didn't know at the time. Maybe it's possible that I had the allergy to alcohol. And so it's possible that I had the allergy to, I'm going to take these out. I had the allergy to alcohol because I kept going back to the liquor cabinet and getting more and being like, the more I drink, the better it'll feel. And that made me think, like, I don't know why I'm not happy with just like one gigantic cup of gin and orange juice. I need to have more. So I said to myself, that was stupid. I'm never doing that again. I'm never doing that again. And I proceeded to go to Canisius High School, where my brother, who's in recovery now, would later teach there for a semester. And the question came up after I had already gone through high school, and when he was a like a volunteer teacher there, does Canisius have a drinking problem? And my answer to that is yes, because my first year I got really good grades. I was like top 10 in the class. And I started thinking about where I wanted to go to college. I was like, I could go anywhere. I picked up a group of friends from Hamburg, which is close to Eden, who were like, we want to drink too. And it was their first time kind of experimenting with alcohol. And when I experimented with alcohol with them after like becoming in proximity with them enough, I did the same thing. As soon as I had alcohol in my body, I drank more and more until I blacked out, and I realized that, like, even though I loved the way alcohol made me feel, it had this double-edged sword of like making me embarrassed and like the book says, I didn't really care that I was embarrassed. I still had the influence of other people, and in my mind I was like, I want to do that again. I was like, I never want to do that again, and I want to do that again at the same time. So I went through Canisius, and I had good grades. I was a rower. Things were just going pretty well for me, except for the fact that I kept getting asked, to drink, and I kept getting wasted. I didn't just get a little bit screwed up, I got a lot of it screwed up. And where do I go from here?
So let's just pick this up. I decided to just say screw it. You know, I don't know what's going on with this. And I got to my like junior year of high school, and I took the SATs, and I got almost a perfect score on the SATs. And I said to myself, you know, I had been a little bit sad by my behavior with alcohol, and you know, I had picked up the devil's lettuce too at this point. So I was driving around smoking some of that. It wasn't anything foreign to me. It was something that people were doing, and it was peer pressured. So I said, you know, I think I'm going to get into a really good school. I think that you know, I think that I've done what I need to do. I had joined the track team, and we were doing really well. That was something that was kind of like a little bit of a frat for me. And then one day I had a party at my parents' house. They have a barn about 200 yards from the house, and they both had breathing machines for sleep apnea. So I had a party, and I had had se several of these parties, and I had a party, and you know, people brought beer, people brought whatever, and we had this party, and I decided at about 2 in the morning to take the party to the hot tub building with a couple of ladies, because for obvious reasons, being a young man. And the hot tub building was about, oh, I'd say 5 yards from the house. So it was a lot closer. So we were smoking some of the marijuana, and my dad, the military officer, came down, and you know, we were all in our underwear, and we were all embarrassed, and so anyways, my parents were like, the party got broken up, and my parents were like, you know, we think you're drinking too much, and we think you're smoking too much weed, so we're gonna send you to therapy. And I said, okay. So my senior year of high school, I spent a lot of that in therapy. I spent the entire thing in therapy, and about partway through, my parents. Or my therapist decided that it would be a good idea for me to take antidepressants. So I did that, and I had a bad reaction to them. And about a week later, I got a letter in the mail for a full scholarship to Loyola New Orleans, which is part of where it's largely where I wanted to go to school, and where I wanted to, like, you know, I wanted to go to a party school. I wanted to get good grades. I wanted to not pay for school. And I wasn't able to go because of the effect that through no fault of my own. And I held on to a resentment for that for like 10 years. So keep in mind, maybe even longer. So keep in mind that I had this great chip in my poker deck, and I lost it. So I ended up going to UB, and UB is not where I wanted to go. It really wasn't. I mean, I had gotten into Tulane, I had gotten into Holy Cross, I'd gotten into some places where I wanted to go, but my parents wanted to keep an eye on me because of my drinking and because of my erratic behavior. So they sent me to UB. And they sent me to the Honors College. And I think the first semester I was there, I expected to be like the big man on campus and be like cool and everything. Like, you know, like I drank and I smoked and I smoked cigarettes and and instead what happened was people made fun of me. You know, I had some friends, but they weren't like real friends. They were drinking friends. And we drank a lot. I mean, my first semester there, I got a 1.4 GPA. And And it was just like just basically like a constant thing. And also I forgot to mention that on my eighth day there, I think that we arrived on a Thursday. So two things I want to mention. We arrived on a Thursday. So I went down to Thursday in the Square, and it was like a band that I wasn't really into. So we went to some friends and I went to Founding Fathers Pub, and they let us in even though we were 18. And the guess who was there? Still kind of famous and still in the heyday of his time, John Resnick was there. So I went outside and I had a cigarette, and I ended up talking to this guy. And the conversation was kind of long and like, you know, nonsensical and just kind of like BS that happens at a bar. But one of the things he said was it was something that would influence me for the rest of my drunkenness, was that he's like, if you smoke pot, you don't have to drink as much. So if you're an alcoholic and you smoke pot, you don't have to drink as much, which is not true. It's almost like putting whiskey in milk. It has almost no effect. But I bought it and I practiced it. So 8 days into college, I went to buy an ounce of pot in Grand Island, and I ended up being detained by someone or with someone who was a squealer. And I was smart enough to say, you know, I'd like to talk to a lawyer. I ended up in the Erie County Holding Center at 8 days into my college career. So things were not going well for me at that time. So what I decided to do to kind of fix it, you know, I had no money. My parents took away all the money they were giving me right off the rip. Was I was going to pledge a fraternity because that would get me out of getting into trouble in the dorms. I had so many drinking offenses and so many community service hours and so many just like shameful events and things like that. So I decided to pledge a fraternity, and there I met personalities that were unlike any I'd ever met before, these Machiavellian personalities. So I did join the fraternity, but after joining, everyone went home to like their respective parts of New York State, and I decided to stay in the frat house and wear out my welcome, and I stole some weed from one of the fraternity brothers. So my tenure there was put on like a probationary status. And later I would react to this very abnormally as an alcoholic would when I took my first crack at putting the drink down for a while. But so anyhow, I stole a bunch of money from my parents and I moved into Collegiate Village. So I had money so I could smoke as much pot and drink as much as I wanted and go to class. And I went to class and I barely maintained a 2.0 GPA. And I stayed in good academic standing. And I woke up every day at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And every night I played basketball, and every night I went to my drug dealer's house, and we smoked a lot of pot, and I drank, and I would drink like four beers because I smoked so much weed. And I thought that it was weed controlling the alcoholism, or the weed controlling the drinking. And maybe it was to a certain extent, but like, you know, it was not good. So my dad was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease, which is a terminal illness. And during this time, it was clear that there was something going on with me. Like, you know, I was just I was not having the kind of like the life experience that a teenager. I was a teenager, 19 years old, living in an apartment by himself, basically doing nothing except hanging out with gang members, and they were part of the football team. It wasn't like I was hanging out with gang members, but they were part of the ECC football team, and I was in any event, my dad eventually died. I saw it fit to try to quit drinking for the first time after going out at an egregious bender. So I went on this egregious bender where I was like passing out on Delaware Avenue, dropping glasses in McGarrett's, breaking glasses, just that guy. I was that guy. And I decided to go back to the doctor to see what the doctor could do for me, and he said, "I want you to quit drinking. I want you to quit drinking, and I'm gonna sign you up for an outpatient rehab where you're gonna get the opportunity to quit drinking." So I went to this outpatient rehab, and I ended up staying sober for about 4 months on my own without going to AA. And that landed me in an inpatient rehab because of all the side dishes with down in Florida. So this brings me to my first meeting. So I land in Florida, get in the limo, go to the rehab, and they head right to a meeting. So my first AA meeting was a guy from like Puerto Rico who I hardly understand. But one of the things that I heard him say was, "How is it?" Like his wife said to him, "I didn't have a wife. How is it that you're going to, how is it that when is this going to stop?" And I had, I had many people tell me that, the guy who was the head of the residence halls that I wanted to get out of, fraternity brothers, they had all said to me, "When is this going to stop, man?" And I didn't really like the program. So I stayed there for 2 months, and the really the only good thing that came out of it was that I kind of got hooked on AA. They took us to an AA meeting every day. And when I got out, the guy who did my intervention, his grandson, lined me up with Derek H, who kind of like babysat me and gave me a little bit of work to do, painting, for my early sobriety. And I think I lasted without a drink about 9 months, and then it was my 21st birthday. I went to an Irish wedding, and that was all that she wrote there. I was back on the booze, and I was back on the booze for another year. So I still wanted to, quitting drinking for that time had been really affirming. It became part of my identity. It became something as like, I have a problem with drinking. I learned stuff about the allergy, the craving, the spiritual malady. I learned stuff about that, and I identified with it, and I wanted to give it a whirl. So I went to Canisius College for a year thinking that I was going to be a doctor and that I was going to arrange my life to fix my alcoholism. And I got an F in chemistry my first semester, and I just went there. But the uplifting spiritual nature of Canisius, I kept going to meetings. I went to like one meeting a week. I went to sober training on Saturdays. And it just wasn't good enough. And people were like, "Man, you really need to get some help other than like what's going on here, with the, I forget what tradition it is, but like they let me go to meetings drunk and let me go to meetings high and they let me do that stuff." And And I got as much as I could out of that, but I really needed to go to rehab. So I took incompletes for a lot of classes. And this was something that was sort of important. I had VA benefits from when my dad died. So when I completed enough classes, I got a certain amount of money. So like when I eventually did get sober, my sobriety date's June 16, 2012, in Nashville at Cumberland Heights. I had like $7,000 to like pay amends and like live off of for my early sobriety. So I get to this place in Nashville. It's on the outskirts, and they tell me like, you've got a fighting chance. So it went from like me being like, okay, I'm going to save my life. I've got a chance of maybe like 5%, to I've got a chance of maybe like 40% when I got out of there. And so I moved into this halfway house, and being the selfish, remember I told you to say, remember I had that poker chip of the scholarship that I kept in my alcoholic mind vault. I said to myself, I am going to have my mom, who does real estate, buy a house for me in Nashville. And that was my plan. So I lived in this halfway house for like 6 months, and it was like dirty and people stole, and the people who ran it, there was like an ex-cop from Chicago who had a stroke. There was a guy who was like, there were a couple guys who were like older, and it's just like it was the typical halfway house experience. One thing I remember about the halfway house was that I wrote a journal. I had a journal in this yellow notebook, and I wrote to myself like for like an hour a day, like what I was thinking. And I saw some of the patterns that I had in my thinking. And I went to meetings. I searched for like different meetings that I liked. I didn't really like CA, Cocaine Anonymous. I wasn't really much of a cocaine person, except that like I could have bought like an ounce of cocaine and moved into a motel for a few days and just burned my life to the ground. So I went to a couple of those meetings, and I mostly went to AA because that was the program that like I saw was helping me, and where I saw it kind of like that was like my drug of choice and like had been the problem all along. So I went there and I got a sponsor, and he was 6'5". He told me I didn't have to do anything that he told me to do. And that was like perfect because I had a number of sponsors in Buffalo who like tried to cram it down my throat. And that didn't work for me because I was just like, if you tell me like I have to do this, I'm not gonna do it. But if you tell me like it's up to me, then like maybe I'll do it. So I started working the steps with him, and we went through in like a rudimental way. He earned my trust to, he was an accountant who had become a CFO, and he had said like I had said, I've done some terrible things, man. I really have. And he was like, me too. I stole enough money to spend to take you to, or to send you to Vanderbilt 5 times as an accountant with a sophisticated white collar crime abilities from my stepfather, or not my stepfather, from my father-in-law. He's like now my mother-in-law calls me all the time asking me how I'm doing. He's like, because I'm paying them back. So he earned my trust in doing that. So I'm not going to go through like the whole step process, but like we went through with them. We went through to the best of my ability. I went through the steps for the first time, including step 9. Now I will talk about step 9 for the first time, I had made a list in step eight, and I was like, I cannot believe these people would ever want to talk to me again. But living in Nashville, I was a ways away from them, and so I contacted a lot of them, and I saw some of them in person, like family members, and I was really doing the deal. I was really doing the Alcoholics Anonymous deal when I saw that a lot of my peers who were in their, 20s, really, some of them were and some of them weren't. So, any event, so I ended up enabling this guy, like driving him from, it's a long story. I did CrossFit with these other alcoholics and I made friends with them and they needed to, they were codependent and I was codependent and they were newer. I realize now that they were like 3 years in, which is pretty new. And like, I got my hopes up. I was like, this is what I've been waiting for my whole life. This is my yes moment where I am like happy, joyous, and free with my recovery. So this guy that I'd been enabling, driving him to this place called Dixon, Tennessee, and back, and where his, like, I was driving like 70 miles a day helping this guy out and like helping him be a part of the friend group. And then he eventually moved in with me. And when I told him I wouldn't drive around him around anymore, he stole my car keys, and I systematically lost my friends. And this gave me a resentment that I would have for like 12 years, because it was just like I just couldn't believe that they would betray me, and it was so great, and I just really thought that it was something that was gonna like last forever. And it didn't. So my mom did buy that house, but she told me it wasn't for me, it was for her, and that pissed me off. But I was like, okay, it's your money. And eventually my life in Nashville just turned into like me going to like parties with like high society like people through a friend named Alex, who was sketchy from Cumberland Heights, and I was helping him. He would lie about what he was doing, but I would drive him to like, he was probably selling drugs or Suboxone or whatever. I don't even know. My life became like, I got fired by this first sponsee that I had, and I really realized that I had to get out of the bad situation with the house. I felt guilty about it. So I moved out of Nashville and back into Buffalo. And it's like, I have a history degree from Buff State. There's a guy named Sam Houston who is the district attorney of Nashville. He got divorced while he lived in Nashville. And when he left, he said he was the most unhappy man in the world. And he went to North Carolina to drink with the Native Americans, form a family with the Native Americans. And this is the guy who would later become the first governor of Texas. And like, I just identified with him so much. I was so unhappy. So I left there. And I felt like I had like mostly, like partially recovered from alcoholism. Like I had done the steps, I'd gotten into 10, 11, and 12. But I moved into a double on the west side in a transition neighborhood. So as you can tell, I was enabled, as you can probably see that by now, that I was an enabled young man in early recovery. So I stayed there, and after a while it became apparent, like, the people who lived upstairs, they're wearing like long sleeve t-shirts, and then I would see them coming out of the basement, and I would, I was still going to meetings, working the steps with a sponsor, managing my life to the best of my ability, which means that I was running my life into the ground and God was keeping me sober. These people were selling dope. They were slinging dope out of the basement of the house. So what did I do with my genius real estate abilities? I took the money that I had and I moved into a place right across from the library downtown. And this again was something where like my mom kept the money, and this is more recent, and I was okay with it. So fast forward, I get my degree from I kept working the steps. I kept getting new sponsors if the old sponsor wasn't working for me, and I settled on one that I had for like 3 years. And I got my degree from Buff State, and I took the test that you have to get it take to get into law school. And I did pretty well on it. You know, I did decent enough to cover for my bad grades from Canisius and UB, and I got into the university. I got into UB Law. I got into University of Kentucky. I got into some other schools, and I decided to go to the University of Kentucky. And I finished my first semester there, and I took a medical leave because I didn't feel like I was doing well. The stress was so immense. And like I didn't I don't know how I didn't drink. It was just the amount of service I had done. Maybe, you know, I had spoken at I had chaired meetings at ECMC. I had gone to Turning Point and picked guys up. I had sponsored guys, but I was like alienated from AA while I was in Buffalo until something called COVID happened. And guess what happened after that? Men Who Trudge was started. And then I could get a meeting every morning at 7:30 in the morning, and I didn't have to worry about, you know, going all across the city doing all these various things. And I could get my morning medicine from just doing the Men Who Trudge and trying to do the prayer and meditation. I had a really good sponsor, John C. John C. carried me through Kentucky, and gave me the ability to stay sober. But if I had stayed in Kentucky, I wouldn't have stayed sober. It's another thing where it's like, if I had stayed in Nashville, I wouldn't have stayed sober. If I had stayed in Kentucky, I wouldn't have stayed sober. I was just talking to our current delegate, Steve, and Steve was like, it's an inside job. It's just like, how's it working out for you going to all these various places and trying to stay sober? So, you know, I was just at an interview for a job. Recently, and they were like, why don't you go to like Boston where your sister's a lawyer and she can do very she can help you in various ways. And I was like, I'm not moving. I've moved enough times. I'm sticking with where I am. I'm staying grounded. So currently I'm working the steps really thoroughly with the step action outline. I'm going through step six now. I've done a really thorough fourth and fifth step. I've forgiven a lot of people. I've come to understand that I had a part in a lot of this that I didn't really fully understand in my 20s and early 30s. And you know, it's I like my home group's not perfect, but I stick with my home group because they have a sufficient message and they have exactly what I need, even if it's always what I want. And you know, I've been sober for 12 years now, and I'm just sticking with the 12 steps and growing and moving along with what I have. And thank you for asking me to speak, and with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Dan. Just let me stop.